For formality's sake, we are in the middle of Ois Sadi test. Now, for informality's sake, we'll move on. We began discussing last week how the beauty of Judaism is that there is nothing speculative about our worship. Everything about our worship is the word of Hashem dictated directly to us. Therefore, we know that this is the way to go about it because this is how Hashem laid it down. So I want to begin. We began addressing last week, the question was raised. The Kuzari said, now what's so great about Judaism is that we received directly the word of Hashem. We didn't have to take it from anybody. We didn't have to take anybody's word from it. We got it straight, and this is what we've been practicing ever since. And we began discussing that, one minute, wasn't it Moshe Rabbeinu who conveyed it to us at the end of the day? So we began answering that last week. I just want to really present the full extent of the answer a little bit better. We said last week how it was shown that Moshe Rabbeinu was actually just a conduit of Hashem's word, but it's more than that. I'll give a mashal. When we're talking, for example, about the concept of someone else bringing the word of the Almighty to those who are supposed to worship Him, let's say, Lahavdil, if we're talking about other religions, right, we have Mohammed was called the messenger, right? The messenger. He came, stepped out of his tent, guys, I have a message, listen up, anybody who listens to me will have who knows what. Anybody who doesn't will suffer eternal damnation, and either you take it on my word or not. He had nothing to show for his claims. He had no way of substantiating his claims. Can you show us anything that shows that you're a messenger of God? His answer that usually was, well, the claim always was that, well, in his tent, wonders had occurred. Yesterday when he was by himself, this and this happened, which proves that I'm a messenger. But when he was asked to show things, nothing was forthcoming. The response always was, well, if you don't believe, then see bin Laden. Right? That was always the style. But as a question of the whole difference between the style of messenger that Moshe Rabbeinu was, like this, we'll put it in the perspective of the following mashal. Mohammed was like, yeah, a person who comes, he's got a message, he's running around the streets trying to sell his message. But with Moshe Rabbeinu, you have a completely different story. Well, think of it of a mashal like this. You have, let's say, the head of some firm, okay? Some firm, some professional firm. Let's say an accounting firm, okay? He's the head of a whole team of accountants. And one day, he comes into the office, he's got news. Listen guys, our firm is going big. We were engaged by, I don't know who, Bill Gates, let's say. Okay? We're engaged by Bill Gates. Now guys, here's the deal. I just want to throw a certain element of faith into this. But he says, guys, here's the deal. I'm going to come with Bill Gates' instructions. You just work. And at the end of the year, take out loans or whatever it is. I'm trying to get in stakes here. Take out loans to subsist for the year. At the end of the year, there's going to be billions for each of us. Now, there's an element of faith here. They have to decide. Do they rely on the guy? Do they not rely on the guy? That might depend on their relationship with the boss. This might just be a ruse to get them to work hard. How do they know? He says, well, look, I have a whole list of instructions from Bill Gates. They say, yeah, but that's a Word document. You could have put that together last night in your office.
After your last story, I wouldn't go with that.
You wouldn't buy it. Okay? Exactly. You mean Mohammed. What?
Wedding.
Oh, okay. So, they don't really have, unless they know the guy is a very reliable guy, are they going to stick their necks out? Are they going to put their parnassa on the line on the assumption that yes, this guy actually is getting instructions from Bill Gates, and if they follow it for the next 2 years, they're going to turn into billionaires? Maybe yes, maybe not. But let's see what happens if this story plays out a little differently. The guy comes and says, Rabbi Isai, our firm was engaged by Bill Gates. We're not going to get paid for the next 2 years, and we're going to follow instructions. But, look, picks out a packet of tickets. We're being called to his office. I imagine Bill Gates' office, I don't know, but I imagine it's like a hotel. We're actually going to be accommodated there for the next 2 years. Okay? We're going to be accommodated there for the next 2 years. We're going to be working in his complex. All costs on him. We're going to be living in 5-star conditions. He's going to be providing all our needs. We'll be working outside the closed door of his office. I'm going to go in every morning and get a list of instructions for him. And this is for real. They all get on the plane, and it's first class, right? First class is already not an issue of faith. They're in first class, right? And they come, and yes, they're taken into Bill Gates' enterprises, into the big complex, into his private building, and there's a whole floor dedicated to them. The left wing is suites, the right wing are the offices. They're told to get comfortable. They get their lunchtime. Lunchtime is, again, a 5-star gourmet meal. And now they're supposed to come into the office and work. And they hear the bell ring, and the foreman jumps up, whatever you call the head of an accounting firm. Foreman? I don't know. Foreman sounds like more in a warehouse. But so whatever it is, the head honcho jumps up. He goes running into the office. The manager comes up, goes running into the office. He's there for a while. He comes out afterwards, subdued. He has a list in his hands. Here's work for the day. They take the instructions again. They didn't hear this come from Bill Gates. But they take those instructions. They do it. Supper time comes. They sit down again. 5-star. Go to sleep in their 5-star accommodations. And this goes on day after day. Every morning, the boss goes into the office, comes out, they hear the intercom, page him, goes into the office, they hear the paging. Okay? Goes into the office, comes out with a list, and they're working. On top of that, every so often, Bill Gates steps out of his office, in the flesh. Bill Gates steps out of his office, makes the rounds, kind of looks at their different computers, you know, he goes back into his office. And this is going on for a year. 2 years. I keep on confusing what my marshal was.
Wasn't there
a show
Bill Gates walking around?
What's that? I didn't say they didn't show yet. I'm just asking one question. Before we contrasted this with the case of the boss who showed up in his own office and he says, guys, here's a list of instructions from Bill Gates. We do this for a year, he's going to pay us, we're going to be billionaires. There was an issue of faith. In this case, is it an issue of faith? When they are actually accommodated in his complex, being fed by him, right? 5-star accommodations for a year. Every day they see the boss going into the office, and on top of that they see Bill Gates. Again, nobody saw Bill Gates issue these instructions, but every day they see the boss going into Bill Gates' office and coming out with a list. And every so often they see Bill Gates come out and make a round and just check what's going on and go back into his office. And they know that they're being accommodated. Now, is it a leap of faith to say that yes, we're working under Bill Gates' direct instructions? Now is it a leap of faith, or now is it obvious that they're working under Bill Gates' instructions? It's obvious, but they never heard anything from him.
You don't need to. You
the whole setting is such that it's as obvious as it gets. Everybody with me? This is what's going on in the Midbar. That's the big difference. If Moshe Rabbeinu, the Jews were living in Eretz Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu comes and says, "La havdil alef alfei havdalot," like Muhammad said, I'm a messenger. And here, folks, I have a list. Shabbos, Kashrus. Either you have faith or you don't. Either you believe him or you don't. That would be an issue of accepting it on faith. But when they were taken out of the realm of the physical world, let's realize that. The Midbar, as stressed to many of the Kadmonim, the Midbar was an unlivable place. Hashem Dafka chose it for that reason. The Midbar was not a place that could support life. Okay? 5-star accommodations, literally. There was spoon fed from Shemayim. We saw the Kuzari saying earlier that the man was a creation, Yesh Me'ayim, ex nihilo. They saw it being created every day. Moshe couldn't do that. Okay? Moshe, call him what you want, magician, whatever you want, every day to create food, ex nihilo. Ex nihilo, for 3 million people. Okay? Min HaShemayim. And again, 5-star conditions. The Amud HaAnon. This is going on all the time. And they see the presence of the Shekhinah over the Mishkan. That they see. And Moshe is summoned in, and he comes out, and he has some new instructions. And on top of that, there's those rounds. People among the camp are becoming Nevi'im. Let's remember that. Moshe was not the only Nevi. Moshe was the Nevi. He was bringing the word of Hashem to all the Jewish people. But people were working towards the level of Nevoah and achieving it. There were Nevi'im among the Jewish people during this period. Which means that basically Hashem is making his rounds in the camp and checking out whether things are going okay or not. And they see also his approval is expressed through the Mount, the Anani HaKavod, etc. And through different mishaps happening when they don't behave. Is this called accepting the word of Hashem through faith? Or is this called experiencing the word of Hashem being given over? I think it's fair enough to say that no. This nation, for those 40 years, was experiencing the word of Hashem being conveyed to them. This is not an issue of hearing it from somebody and accepting it on faith. That's what the Kuzari means to say. The Torah that we have was dictated to us by Hashem, not by means of an intermediary. Now, of course, Moshe was an intermediary, but it's in a very different sense. When we say an intermediary, we mean somebody who blocks all contact. We don't know where he really got it from. We have to believe him. We didn't have to take Moshe Rabbeinu's word. We saw Hashem's presence. We saw Hashem running things. We saw Hashem summoning Moshe in. We saw Hashem responding to the way we take his instructions. So yes, this nation received the Torah dictated by Hashem. That's what the Kuzari is telling us. So therefore, that's the greatness of our Torah. Hashem came and dictated. There's no speculation figuring out, how do I think it's right to serve Hashem? There's no speculation, there's no question. Hashem spelled it out. And therefore, the Kuzari is saying, this really is the only way of connecting to Hashem. Because like we said before, like the Kotzker Rebbe said, you're going to figure out how to serve Hashem, that in itself is a contradiction in terms. Because that means that you understand Hashem, like the Kotzker Rebbe said, a God who I could understand is not worth worship. If I could figure out what's the right way to serve God, that means that I basically am a master of divine psychology. I know what pleases Hashem. I know what doesn't. Why? Based on my little limited frame of reference. Is it worth serving such a God? A God that you can figure out what's good for him and what's not? That's a God to take care of. It's not a God to serve. So therefore, the only true way to worship Hashem, to worship a God, can only be in this fashion, where the God comes and dictates to you exactly what you need to do to access him, to connect him. And this Hashem did in full detail. So therefore, we continue his description. He's drawing on the Karbanos as his example, right? So he said, Hashem came and spelled out the tiniest details. Now again, we as people might come and say, do all the details really make a difference? And the answer to that is, so again, so you do understand what Hashem needs and doesn't need? You're going to explain to Hashem this is not all that important? The whole premise of your relationship with Hashem is that you're dealing with something way beyond your comprehension. And therefore, how can you ever come and say, how important is that detail? The way the Chovitz Avodah puts it, I think I mentioned that. When you want to figure out how crucial any command is, he says, don't try to measure how important the mitzvah is. The only way to really measure how important the mitzvah is by measuring, well, who's the one who commanded it? That's really the only way of doing it. Al tabit, l'gdoras ha-mitzvah or l'gdoras ha-mitzvah. You want to gauge how great a mitzvah is? Don't assess how important it is, because what means do you have of assessing that? Your way of assessing it is by seeing how great the one who commanded it is. If the one who commanded it is Hashem, it's a pretty important mitzvah. That's what we're being told here. You know, it's like saying, we'll just give a muscle for this. You have a kid who needs to undergo a medical procedure, very complex medical procedure, and his parents spend months consulting. They do immense research, and they speak to the top people in the field, and the top people in the field are deliberating, and they're not sure whether they should go with a surgeon in Holland or a surgeon in Norway. Okay? Now the kid knows, poor kid, he's been around, he's been to different hospitals in different places. He knows that the question is between Holland and Norway. Okay? Finally, the decision is Norway. And the kid says, I appreciate my parents' wisdom. I appreciate my parents' wisdom. I appreciate the way they were really able to grasp the picture here. Why? I was in both places. The airport in Holland does not have a soda machine. Does not have a soda machine. The airport in Norway has a soda machine. And therefore, I appreciate my... I'm right in touch. I'm right in line with my parents' decision. I understand. Of course it should be Norway. In Norway, there's a soda machine. In Holland, there isn't. He understands. Right? Does he begin to understand? Whatever we appreciate of the mitzvahs is appreciating the same way that kid appreciated that soda machine in Norway. Whatever we can appreciate of the mitzvah. We're grasping a tiny little element that's so small in the big picture. Because again, you're dealing with Hashem. So therefore, can you ever wonder, right? And afterwards the kid wonders, okay, my parents made the right decision when they decided which airport to go to. But when they decided where we're going to actually stay, they made the wrong decision. Because the other time we stayed in a different city, and there was a better view from the window. And they were in a different medical institution. So, when you're wondering, is this detail really so important? You have to figure, well, do you have Hashem's perspective? Do you have any idea about what's involved? Again, if we ask the kid, he'll tell you that the whole purpose of the trip was achieved once you got the soda in Norway. What do we need to continue on to the hospital for? What's the point? Now let's turn around and go back. We achieved our purpose. When you're ever wondering, why is this detail important? Why is that so important? The answer is, why is the hospital so important? What do you understand? Again, you're dealing with a God's mind. You want to understand it. So therefore, all we can do is pay meticulous attention to what are the details he's saying. We realize that we're dealing with things that are way beyond us. What are the details he's prescribing? So then, he draws on the example of a carbon, and we're going to continue. In the case of the carbon, the details are so precise, you must cut it in exactly this way. What exactly do you do with each limb? This part of the fat should be burnt on the mizbeach, not that part. If I switch it around, is it the end of the world? What big difference does it make? Answer is all the difference in the world. It makes a godly difference. What has to be eaten, what has to be burnt? Who should eat? Who should burn it? Who is the class that should be offering the karbanos? You can never deviate from that. Now, even among the class of those who are offering the korban, the eich tia tchuna samakriv. What exactly, what characteristics should they have? Meaning, even within the kayanim, there are all kinds of requirements. There's age, there's physical condition, etc., etc. Now we come and say, it's not nice. A person has a cataract. He shouldn't be able to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. Is that nice? So that's like the kid coming and saying, is it nice that the nurse who's so nice to me should not be the one to be allowed to operate on me? Again, what do you understand?
You see, by definition, up against God, we can't really understand yet. We have all the elements of those who are based on
good.
The portion give us.
Good. Good. I'll get to that. Now, Shaloyet Gam, there can't be the smallest flaw in Takshitem Umabushem. With all, even so precise, exactly the things that they're wearing, right? And if the whole carbon was done right by the right person, but his garment was a little misfitted, that whole thing's no good. That's the halacha. It's got to be a perfect fit. The kol sheken malbush kain gadol, and we're even more particular about the vestments of the kain gadol. There, things get all the more sensitive because he's actually stepping into the actual place where Hashem manifests in this world. The place that houses the Shechina, the Ohen, and the Torah steps into the Kodesh HaKadosh. The Kodesh HaKadosh is Kiviyachol Hashem's bedroom. We have that among us, like we discussed earlier, right? Hashem is a member of our community, Kiviyachol. But nobody steps in there. Kohen Gadol steps in, and then there are a million conditions and qualifications. Not a million. Enough for a human being to be able to handle. But very many. It's intricate. And not only do the conditions and the time and the state of the person have to be right, but he has to be in a perfect state of purity, right? Halachas of Tumah are so complex. Madregas HaTaharis, Vakdushas, Vatfilas, and all the different levels of Tara, and the special Tfilas that you have to say when you're there at the time. Davar She'erach Sipuroi. These are things that we can go on and on about, right? See Kachim, right? Kachim and Taharis. But Lamaisa, we have that all rooted in our Torah and in the Torah Shebaal Peh, which was conveyed to us by the sages. Hakol midivrei Elokim im Moshe, which is all Torah Shebiksav, all of Torah Shebaal Peh, is the dictated word of Hashem, the live word of Hashem. Now, the chen tchunat hamishkan kula hu asol Moshe ba'asinai. Now also, the whole form of the mishkan was shown precisely. There was no speculation, no doing what's appropriate. It was all spelled out to the T. Hashem said, this is the only way. Again, what are we trying to do with all this? Connect Hashem. Connect Hashem you can do only on His precise terms. Therefore, Hamishkan, the oil, the shulchan, the noyah, the oren, the chatzah mishkan, the amuda, the mikzah. Everything about the mishkan and its coverings and all of the different utensils of the Beis HaMikdash. The shulchan, the menorah, the oren, and exactly how the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash of the mishkan should be set up. What should the fences be made out of? What should the pillars be made out of? How exactly should they be set up? What should they be leaning on? The chatzah mishkan of Shvet, okay, the kol malachosav, and all of the different aspects that went into forming the mishkan, heroi ruchnius v'tzuroisam gashmius. Moshe was shown from the spiritual level down to the physical level, meaning actually, and this is also a part of understanding the details of mitzvahs. Sometimes we feel, why is that so important? The main thing is the idea. But kind of makes a point here. everything about the Mishkan, and the truth is everything in our lives too, and the truth is us ourselves also, that everything about the Mishkan was a manifestation, was a physical representation of some spiritual entity, something deeper. And therefore, what Moshe was actually shown was something completely spiritual, half physical, abstract, spiritual concepts that, as you took them lower and lower down through the spiritual realms, started manifesting in a certain physical form, which to our eyes appears as a pillar of cedar, dafka cedar, okay? Can't be oak. Very, very important. Cedar, not oak. Why? Because again, if you're going back up the chain to the spiritual source, oak is completely not what we're talking about. With the rings around it, and with what it was plated with, is all representing much deeper spiritual concepts. And now the truth is, this is true for every mitzvah we do. Every mitzvah we do represents much deeper things, which the mitzvah itself is almost like a mashal to what the mitzvah really is. That's what the Maharal says. The Torah is not physical at all. The Torah that talks about one ox goring another ox is completely spiritual concepts. It's not physical at all. Hashem, in his genius, managed to put it into physical terms for us to be able to relate to. Meaning, it says that if your ox gores the neighbor's ox, you gotta pay. So it's not the pshat that, well, there's a world with oxen, and now we have to figure out how to set that up right. That's not what the Torah is. Since there is a very, very deep spiritual concept represented by an ox, which is somehow a core special of this concept. And if you ask the Arizal, he would tell you what the depth of the concept of one ox scoring another ox is. Something completely abstract and esoteric. In order for us to be able to live that, Hashem said, you know what? We're going to create oxen. And not only that, we're going to create them with horns so they can gore and thereby play out this spiritual concept. And you know what we'll also do? We'll give them a tendency to gore. Ah! And now the halacha of one ox goring another ox can play out in a physical way. But these are all deeper spiritual concepts. Okay, I'm going to bunch that together with your question, and we'll get to all this soon. Very profound. Okay? I'll just say what Noach is asking. Noach is asking, if all this is really such deeper significance, so what's the point of relating to it in such a physical way? Okay? We'll see. Now, so Moshe was shown from the original source what is being represented in the Mosaic world and how it, as it comes down, takes on physical form and manifests in this world as cedar beams covered with the Oyvei Selima Adamim, with the first, with the hides of rams, and on top of that the hide of a tachash, all very coarse physical misholim of very, very deep concepts. Now the Chena Bayis HaGadol, also the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash was not yet the best interior designer and have him design the most beautiful house possible. No, such a thing simply wouldn't connect. Beis HaMikdash has to be set up perfectly. You haven't tried today, I don't know, are radios still in use today? I don't know, and if they are in use, they're certainly not used in the way of turning the dial until you get the thing right. They were talking about the 1600s. So, but when I grew up, that's how we used radios. And the rest of you reach my age, you're able to relate to that. But you had to get the tuning exactly right, right? A little bit off and you couldn't tune in. That's what you're doing when you're building a Beis HaMikdash. You're trying to tune it exactly right so as to be able to catch all that spirituality and get it in. We'll use an inappropriate mussel. And any inappropriate mussel is a satellite dish. Right? There's all kinds of things going up in space. But you can't connect to that. You take a satellite dish and somehow it harnesses it and brings it in. But that doesn't mean that a kid can go and say, alright, I see the idea. So he takes some big thing like that and puts it up on the roof and he's waiting for things to happen. No, there's a lot of interest to see through. What we're doing is, with all of these things, with the mitzvahs we do, with the Beis HaMikdash we make, with the Mishkan we make, is making these antennas, these satellite dishes, that are designed just perfectly to connect to their counterparts in the higher places and bring them down. Or in other words, to bring the Shechina down. Of course, that could be only done if it's dictated to us. How can a person figure these things out? Impossible. So therefore, the Beis HaMikdash also was followed the exact dictates. Asher Bona Shleima, the beautiful edifice that Shleima HaMelech built, Hera LeDavid Tzurasa Ruchnius. Also, it was shown to David on its spiritual level, which was then drawn down to the physical. And the ultimate, eternal Beis HaMikdash, Asher Ye'odonu Boi, that we were promised. Hail the Navi Yechezkel to Rasa Vitkunasa. It was shown to the Navi Yechezkel in precise detail. I don't know if anybody's ever learned this. The end of Yechezkel. I know that when I made a project of going through Nach, I started those Pukim and then I skipped it. It's about 10 Pukim, if I remember correctly, of architecture. It's a Nevuah given to Yechezkel in which every last detail and measurement of every last aspect of the third Beis HaMikdash is spelled out in full detail, and it's impossible to put together. It's so confusing. I was determined to get through it, I just couldn't. And all the different mafarshim, there's the Gruz way of working it out, and there's the Malbim's way of working it out, and there's the Tesis Yomtiv's way of working it out. Entire Sfarim were written just working it out. Very, very complex. I think it's like 10 Pukim, I don't remember. At the end of Yechezkel, describing the exact architecture of the third Beis HaMikdash. Also, because it's so important that there will be an amah thick and not a centimeter less, because otherwise the tuning is off. It's not going to connect. The aim ba'avodah tzorel svara v'lo yakasha v'lo yischaknus. In service of Hashem, there is no room for speculation. No room for figuring things out. If it's not dictated by Hashem, then by definition, you're off. It can't be done. The Iluhaya king, if service of Hashem did boil down to speculation, figuring out what's appropriate, how should it be done? The philosophers certainly would have reached greater places in service of Hashem than the Jewish people. Or it's a difference. The difference is that no, it's impossible for the greatest human mind to begin fathoming what it is. What it is, it can only be done if it's dictated, spoon-fed to us in babyish terms, in terms of wood, metal, flesh. That was laid down to us by Hashem.